RTI Podcast Digital Series on this Friday. Happy to be joined by Mike Wilson of the Knoxville News Sentinel. Mike, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Glad to have some slow time after quite the busy 8 months or so there.
You say that, but then we have, you know, like 2 weeks until SEC Media Days start. So, you know, it'll just
don't blink.
I know. I mean, it is what it is. You've got enough stuff going on. I do too. So maybe we'll find some vacation time in between there. So who knows, man? Big to do when it comes to Tennessee baseball. You got the Major League Baseball draft that's going to be starting here in a few days. You've got roster turnover, trying to see what that's going to look like for next season. You've got multiple Tennessee players in, you know, Cape Cod League, California League. You know, there's a collegiate league, I forgot the name of it, that they play in California and Arizona. So when you look at it right now, you know, what are some players that, in your opinion, stand out when it comes to the Major League Baseball draft? Like, is Tennessee going to be looking at 7-8 players drafted, and also touch on what's different about this year's draft compared to years before?
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee certainly has a lot of guys that are going to get picked. I think that list starts with Chad Dallas and Max Ferguson. Those are probably the top two guys that Tennessee has going out. I think Ferguson's probably the first guy off the board from Tennessee's roster, just because he's a lefty bat with some speed and some defensive versatility. Then it's Dallas. And then right after that, you see guys like Jake Rucker, Connor Pavlone. Those guys are right there in that mix. Liam Spence is going to be in that mix as top 10 round guys. Jackson Leith is an interesting one, probably gets drafted, but very little film, tape, whatever you want to call it, of his time at Tennessee because of the pandemic season and then an injury this season. Sean Hundley is in that group. Luke Lipsius is a guy that might sneak in that draft late, but could sign a free agent deal. And there's other free agent opportunity guys too. I think you look at Camden Sewell, Jason Rackers, maybe Elijah Pleasance. So a lot of guys in that mix, but I think that first group of Ferguson, Rucker, Pavlone, Dallas, and Spence are likely to hear their names called pretty early.
You know, I try to put this into terms for somebody yesterday. You know, when Admiral and Grant and Kyle and all those left the basketball squad and moved on with their careers a couple of years ago, Bone included, whatnot. And then you look at this year's baseball squad that everybody fell in love with. You know, from us in the media, we enjoyed it because the players were, you know, they had fun talking to us. They understood the game. They understood how to handle themselves. But then from a fan standpoint, Mike, you know, I think if you're a baseball fan for Tennessee, you can name off the nine on the field and even in the bullpen. And I think that's a next step when it comes to recognition for the baseball program. So when we look at what it could look like come, you know, fall World Series type stuff, fall ball, you know, and Tennessee gets going, how different is this roster going to look next season compared to what we just went through this past season?
Dramatically so. And also with that MLB group, I would be remiss if I didn't bring that Sean Hundley is also in that mix.
Yeah.
That's a guy who certainly could hear his name called as well. Just given how awesome he was for Tennessee at so many points this year, wanted to double back and get him in there because he's so often to me is that forgotten guy because he's so consistent and good. He sometimes flies under the radar. Tennessee's team will look dramatically different next year. I mean, realistically, if Evan Russell comes back for some reason, which he can do, they would still have lost 6 of 9 guys in the lineup. As it stands, it's probably just Jordan Beck and Drew Gilbert. I mean, the pitching staff side looks a lot different. Will Heflin's definitely gone. Chad Dallas is gone. So there's your Friday and Saturday guys. It's going to look a whole lot different. Bullpen has potential to look quite different too if Hundley's gone. Sewell, all those guys out there. So it's going to be a very different team, but that's also baseball. That's kind of the way it goes in terms of turnover. But I think you compared it to Grant and Admiral's basketball teams, and that's very, very accurate to me in that the reason that Tennessee fans fell in love with those guys is they had a chance to kind of grow with them from a very average team into a championship contending team. And that's exactly what guys like Jake Rucker, Connor Pavlone, like those are guys who have been at Tennessee through the bad and into the good. And it's a bummer that Tennessee fans didn't get that 2020 season to see those guys as well, because who knows what would have happened then. But yeah, there's just so many of those guys who've been mainstays and key pieces, and almost all of those guys are now moving on.
Okay, so for the folks that don't maybe, I don't want to say not understand the MLB draft, but there's so many rounds to it. There's money that's offered in the 15th round that's, you know, different than the 10th round. We all understand that part. But what would it take for certain players that Tennessee has signed or already have committed, you know, like a Chase Burns or a Brady House out of Georgia? You know, the list can go on and on, but what would it take for a kid like that to turn down Major League Baseball money and come play at Tennessee under Vitello?
I mean, it's not a kind of thing that happens when a guy's a first round pick very often. I think it was Matt McClain, I think his name, UCLA shortstop, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. He's the first round guy that turned it down. I think Ole Miss or Mississippi State, Gunnar Hoagland, whichever one he's at, I believe he was a first round guy that turned it down. The Braves a few years back, I think, picked someone 10th overall or so that didn't sign. But there was some injury stuff there, if I'm not mistaken, looking back. But all that aside, if you're a guy that gets drafted in the top 10, you're signing. If you're a guy that gets drafted in the top three rounds out of high school, you're signing typically, unless you can't come to an agreement. But a guy like Brady House has been on MLB's radar for a long time. He's a top 10 guy. And a lot of times these deals are worked out before it starts. I mean, the numbers, who's taking you, going to know what the signing bonus is going to be, because that's the big thing with baseball, is a signing bonus number. You know, if a high school player is adamant on going to college and doesn't want to get drafted, they set a massive signing bonus number that teams have to get to, or else they're going to college. And those are the when you see an elite high school guy not get drafted till the, in this case, the 20th round or something, that's the reason why, is that they've decided to go to college and told teams their signing bonus was too high. But if you see a guy get drafted early, typically they're gone.
You know, here's something I mentioned with the new NIL stuff that's come into play, name, image, and likeness. We've seen that with college athletes this past week, last week and a half, really. How much can that play a factor with a baseball squad compared to, you know, basketball, football, whatnot? So there's a lot of camps and whatnot these baseball players can do, and there are endorsements out there, I guess, for guys that maybe come back, like you were talking about, like Rucker or Gilbert or something like that. But is NIL going to play a big part in college baseball?
I think it plays a part in everything. Baseball, you know, just like it always is when it comes to the college athletic scene, flies under the radar. I don't know if you're going to see the same stuff, but I mean, the stars, I mean, you talk about guys like Vanderbilt, Jack Leiter, and Kumar Rocker. Those are guys who certainly could have made a lot off various things doing that. I don't know if it's going to be as easy for a college baseball player as a college football player at Tennessee to make a decent amount of money off that. But I don't know. I think we're still in the early days of that, obviously, figuring out how much people will make off it, how people will do it. And certainly it's an opportunity, but at the same time, if a high school guy gets a signing bonus of $500,000 thrown at him, not going to match that in NIL anytime soon.
Hey, you don't see any movement with Tony Vitello's staff or anything, you know, with we know Ross already moved on, but, we think Elander and Frank and whatnot. I know Chris Jackson got promoted. So that pretty much, everything's pretty much locked in for next season, you think?
I would assume so. I mean, to some extent, I'd look at Frank Anderson and assume this is probably the place that he kind of wraps up his career whenever he'd like to. I think, or at least on Vitello's staff here. Elander, I think, is pretty content. He's also a guy that's had opportunities and will continue to get them. He's a really, really good hitting coach. Then Richard Jackson slid into that volunteer assistant job. So, yeah, I think that's kind of going to be what it is. I wouldn't expect any movement there.
Yeah, Richard, not Christian. It is what it is. Hey, so, all right, I want to switch over to basketball for a minute, man. You look at what Kennedy Chandler's doing with the Team USA, the World Cup team, U19. And you look what Santiago Vescovi did with Uruguay up in Canada. Did not, you know, their team didn't have a good showing, but I thought he played pretty decent for the time that he was in. Olivier is getting some playing time with Finland right now overseas. How's this basketball squad look right now from you talking with folks over the summer, especially the newcomers that have come in? Do you feel like, you know, I know some folks are missing. I know Chandler's been missing some time and whatnot. But does this feel like a group that, you know, can come together and gel pretty early? Or is this maybe like a group like Kentucky has seen in the past where they have so many young players come in that it takes them a minute to start gelling? Even like last year's squad, you know, where it took 10 games, you know, 12 games. You know, is that something we see this year, or do you think this is a different type of group?
You know, I mean, they also do have the veteran guys, though, like John Fulkerson, Josiah James. Santiago is a veteran at this point.
Right.
So I think it's a good blending of that. But Trey, you're mistaken. I'm a baseball beat writer now.
That's true. I forgot about that.
Baseball beat writer.
So, I completely set up. I got to get your title right.
I think this basketball team is going to be very interesting to watch. On paper, has similar talent levels to last year. Certainly not necessarily two first round picks in next year's NBA draft. Could shake out that way with Kenny Chandler, Brandon Huntley Hatfield. I mean, Josiah Jordan James is an NBA guy at some point to me. So it could shake out that way, but that doesn't have that same oomph that I think Tennessee fans felt for Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson, just because there hadn't been that level of recruiting in a while. But this team is differently built. It's more balanced from guards, forwards, options across the board. And I think that's going to be really interesting to watch, is having a more of a true 1-5, because last year, I think it became clear that as John Fulkerson struggled, that there was nothing else but guards to really choose from. And Eve Pons being a swing guy, but when Fulkerson struggled, it was all about the guards. And I think this team has more options and more ways to beat opponents.
Hey, Mike, how big was it for Tennessee to be able to get the out-of-conference schedule that they got this year? I mean, Texas Tech at MSG, you know, Villanova, they're going to play in the Mohegan Sun tournament. You got Memphis, you know, you've got Arizona that looks like it's going to be on the schedule. And there's a few more, but how big, you know, they have potential to play North Carolina or Purdue. In your mind, it seems like Rick Barnes just kind of upped it every year when it comes to out-of-conference scheduling. And this year it feels like they have a lot more marquee games on the schedule than the previous years. Do you like what Barnes is doing and saying, okay, let's go out and let's just play the best teams we possibly can? Or do you feel like, you know, you need to find those wins early on in the season compared to going up against the best talent around the country in the first 3 weeks?
Yeah, I'm always a fan of marquee non-conference college basketball games. I think it's a lot of fun for fans. It's a lot of fun to cover those games because you don't necessarily see those teams play all the time. And I think that's what Tennessee's done, challenge themselves early. And you learn your team that way pretty quickly too. You learn kind of the strengths, the weaknesses, and you figure out what you can do later in the year and figure out what you have to do better by going up against the best. And yeah, I'm here for that. I think it's a lot of fun to see those games, write about those games and have that happen. I mean, you think back to that 2018 November, December run where it was Madison Square Garden with Louisville and Kansas, Phoenix against Gonzaga, and then Memphis maybe a week later. And that was kind of in a 3-week window, I'd like to say. And that's awesome. I mean, that's the stuff that college basketball should be all about.
Yeah, but you also just like to travel. So we're going to get mixed up. You know, you're going to get to go to, you know, and I'll be tag along. We'll go to MSG and go to the Mohegan Sun Casino and whatnot. So this also helps you out in a way as well.
I do love Marriott points. I may or may not view most of my life through the lens of how many Marriott points I have. That's kind of part of my identity.
That's absolutely beautiful. All right, speaking of traveling, I want to touch on football for a minute. Tennessee getting ready for media days coming up here in 2 weeks. Tennessee's going to send two or three players to media days. It's going to be a little condensed when it comes to coverage just because of COVID stuff going on in Hoover. So kind of be an in, you know, get in, get out type of deal. But Tennessee trying to set themselves up this season and get as much publicity as they can, even though with everything that they're going through, they have that Thursday night opener. You know, what if you're a Tennessee fan right now, this could be a real simple question. What do you have to get excited about Tennessee football right now? Is it the prospect of, okay, maybe we can go out and score 40 points a game? We haven't seen Tennessee do that in a long time. Or is it just the unknown of a new head coach and staff?
What you get excited about is the chance to see more than 21.4, 22.4, whatever it was last year, points per game scored.
I agree.
That's the excitement level. I think, you know, Tennessee fans have watched a defensive-minded program for the last 3 years. And at the same time, they've watched other teams put up a lot of points on that defensive-minded program and watched teams put up a lot of points in other games while being kind of left in the dust in terms of the strategy. And I think that's the reason you get excited. I don't know how good Tennessee is going to be. Certainly a lot of questions on defense. Some questions on offense, specifically tight end, probably offensive tackle is kind of unsettled to some extent, but yeah, I mean, that's where you get excited. If you're a Tennessee fan, you're going to see an up-tempo fast team that wants to score points. And that's just so different from the brand of football that they've seen. And I don't know, I think even in losses, there's a different feeling when the team that you were pulling for scored points. I think there's a less of a degree of just depression and boredom surrounding that.
No, I agree. You're not putting up 13 points and it's not ugly and you've at least got a game to be excited about in some form or the other. So, no, I agree with you on that. Another question kind of piggybacking off football. Tennessee keep, you know, they're pushing this all-in campaign and trying to raise money, but also trying to sell season tickets. In your opinion, with everything going on and with COVID that happened last year and people, you know, they got content, you know, chilling at the house, watching it on television. We saw games last year where it wasn't even at capacity for what it could have been, you know, in the stadium. So how hard is this going to be for Danny White, in your opinion, over the next 2 to 3 years to start raising the kind of money that they want to raise, but also get people brought back in, you know, to football, which drives athletic programs around the country? Because I say that to say this, Mike, a lot of people now have the ability to say, okay, football's not going well. Let me get ready for basketball season. Then I'll get ready for baseball season. Like, they have those options now, Mike.
Yeah. You know, I think what's so interesting to me, I've been in Knoxville for 4 years almost. The biggest thing is that Tennessee fans care. So even when this team's struggling, specifically football, talking about there, they're going to be there. They're going to give their money. They're going to buy things. I mean, it is an all-in fan base. I mean, the phrase fits. I think it's a hard sell with football right now to some extent. I think there's also the side of the fan base that hates the thought of Nealon not looking like it does right now on the inside. Just because tradition, 102,000, I mean, all those things that people cling to, that can be a bit of a hard sell. But I think Danny White eventually is going to be able to do those things and raise that money just because this fan base cares so much and wants to see football back to prominence. And in a way, supporting financially is kind of one of the ways to do that beyond just season tickets and cheering. So, there's no questioning the loyalty and undying fandom for Vol fans when it comes to everything, and especially football.
Yeah, but Nealon needs a lot of renovations as well. I mean, let's be honest with each other here. I mean, the south end zone does. The west side, I know they're trying to build it up, but, you know, it needs renovations done to it. But also there are other facilities on campus that need that as well, athletic facilities. So they have to make a choice on what they're going to do, Mike. And, you know, I'm interested in this quick question. Is it better to go ahead and do something with the baseball stadium while it's hot, which I already think they're going to do, but it's just hypothetical. Baseball stadium while it's hot, or go ahead and get this new Jumbotron set in at Nealon Stadium and upgrade the west side seating with chair backs? I mean, is there really a choice because of the revenue generating sport?
I mean, there's no doubt the baseball stadium is what needs the most attention. And I do believe in striking while the iron's hot. I think, you know, Tennessee's got a lot of momentum with that program, and you've got a chance to build it into something bigger. Because you look at what Lindsey Nelson Stadium is and what Tony Vitello did with these teams, and that is a very tilted balance in terms of what was accomplished with what was provided. So I think you have to look at that and say, well, what can be accomplished if more is provided? And it's pretty clear that could be pretty great. And to me, yeah, you strike while it's hot. You go out there, make an investment, make the changes, boost recruiting with that, boost commitment with that. And I think you can really throw lighter fluid on a program that's already cooking. And that to me is a good move. But as you said, revenue is revenue. And football will have an ROI on that's different than baseball will, just in terms of long-term potential and also growth. You know, ADs are businessmen in a lot of ways, and they have to look at the bottom line. And yeah, Nealon's going to bring more money back based on the changes you make there. But I also think when you have a chance to bring a non-rev program closer to being not a negative on the bank account, or make more money than it already does, you do it.
That's a good way to put it. No, I agree with you. And that's why I think that, yeah, again, they have to strike while the iron hot. Hey, one more question on the way out, man. So this name, image, likeness stuff. What's the craziest one you've seen so far? And is this something, in your opinion, that, okay, maybe over the next week or two, you know, they continue rolling in for these players, but then it kind of takes a little bit of a, now, I want to say flat lines, but it dips off during fall camp. And then once football season starts, those first 2 weeks, you see who's hot out there. Okay, those are names companies can invest in. How do you see the NIL playing out over the next 2 months, and what's stood out to you so far?
I don't know if there's one thing that stood out to me so far. To be fair, there's so many of them flying around that I think it's hard to keep track of. I think when you look at Grant Frecking, I might be butchering his
last name. No, you got it. Frecking. Yeah.
Yeah. Tennessee's wide receiver. I mean, he's already a CEO of his business, which David Ubben at The Athletic did a really great story on a couple of years ago. That's a guy who's already in the business world. And I think what we've seen him do on Twitter and start to move forward with this, maybe was more equipped than just about anyone could have been. That's jumped out to me. But I think we're going to see a lot of interesting things move forward with that as the rules are more understood, as people figure out more about it. How it works, partnerships that can form, and all those things. It's going to be interesting for the next couple of months to see how it changes.
Mike, what kind of work you got coming up, buddy? I know you got some big articles on deck, man. What you got rolling besides, moving ground, moving zip codes?
Just working a lot of baseball stuff, man. The MLB draft's one of my favorite things every year. We kind of talked about earlier, it's such a unique thing. There's so many different kind of pieces that go into play there, and so many different levels of players that can be picked. And, you know, when you cover a college baseball team, a lot changes when it comes to the MLB draft, because you're not just necessarily losing current players, but future players. So a lot of stuff to do with that, man. That's my focus right now, because I'm a baseball beat writer.
Where can everybody follow your baseball work?
By Mike Wilson on Twitter, and govalsextra.com to find the work.
We appreciate Tennessee baseball beat writer Mike Wilson joining us on the RTI Podcast Digital Series. Mike, thanks, bud.
Sure thing. Glad it was a home run.
Thanks, man.